Wisconsin became part of the Union on May 29, 1848. Known as America's Dairyland, home of Culver's, Leinenkugel's, Summerfest, and the Green Bay Packers. Birthplace of Gene Wilder, Liberace, Frank Lloyd Wright, Georgia O'Keeffe, and Chris Farley himself. Ed Gein, Jeffrey Dahmer. UFO sightings happen on a daily basis. It has more haunted locations than it does bars. The devil himself created a playground tucked into its forests. For these reasons and many others, America's Dairyland is also America's Scaryland!
All right.
We'll decide later if that makes it to air at all. I think that's evidence for a lawsuit.
Depends on who's listening.
Okie dokie. We are back once again. Another deep probing of America's Scary Land.
Not too deep.
Well, one knuckle deep. Two knuckle deep?
Four knuckles deep. I didn't do the knuckle
the
math.
Whole thumb.
I never knew knuckles. I have small hands.
Mikey's like, you count knuckles?
They always talk about just the tip, and I was like, that's everything.
That's what more do you need?
Well, we already started off the rails, so here we go. Right. Welcome back to another episode.
You can call them episodes. It's not going to kill
us.
It's
calling them episodes, Jake.
It's not going to kill us for you to say that our episodes are episodes.
Get together. What are we?
Probing. They're probing.
I like get together now. A little get together.
I feel like this one was like more of a research base.
Well, I mean, it was, but it's still probing.
I watched you research.
Mikey told me he was real proud of me for all the research.
Nice.
So I'm going to restart because I don't want to use any of this.
Too bad.
Well, I know the power's in your hands, but I'm going to restart and make editing hell for you. So
watch me just cut the next 5 minutes.
Well, here joining you guys again is Michael.
Yeah. See, I like this guy.
Yeah.
He knows how to podcast. Assume every episode is someone's first episode.
We'll start off as Michael, but it eventually turns into Mikey.
Yep. He becomes Mikey, yeah. Yep. Mikey's the newest addition to the Scaryland family.
Yep. I'm Jake.
I'm Nick. We essentially force Mikey to be here because every time he's like, are you sure you want me there? I don't know anything about the topic. And that's why we call you Mike, just in case.
Well, I know things about the topic. I know things. I don't have any experience.
That's
on
what
this
makes
one.
Good podcasting.
This one's interesting.
Yeah.
What is this one? What are we talking about tonight?
What if Jake, we just never Mike? Told him?
I think Jake should go off on this one.
So today's episode is going to be a fun one because not only is it near and dear to Nicholas's heart.
This is true.
But it's probably one. I feel like it's one of the first cryptid/paranormal things that a lot of people hear about besides maybe Bigfoot.
Yeah, it's like more mainstream, like when you get into paranormal.
Yeah.
But why is this?
We'll get into that. Okay. Yeah. But we are talking about the Mothman.
The Mothman.
This is going to more than likely be a series of episodes. We have a lot to cover. A lot. Because if you're listening to this, you probably know the general gist of the Mothman in the West Virginia sense.
Yep.
What we are going to spend a great amount of time on is the Lake Michigan Mothman. There is a whole new flap of sightings. And so we're going to get into all of that here in just a couple minutes.
What range, like year-wise, are we talking about for Michigan specifically?
So we'll I've got all that ready to go. We'll dig into it here shortly. We're just going to do a quick overview on the West Virginia Mothman and then like the Point Pleasant situation. And then we will get into all of the accounts from the last ways ago.
The last ways ago.
Actually predating the West Virginia sighting.
Oh, ownership.
Predating.
Yeah.
Got here, West Virginia. No time for you.
All right. So we're going to dive into the history of the Point Pleasant Mothman. All right, so the overall gist of the Point Pleasant Mothman is back in 1967, there was a slew of sightings of this creature, this moth-like creature, six-foot moth-like creature.
No one witness actually described it as a moth. That was the newspapers.
Yeah, the newspapers sensationalized it as that.
Mainly because of Batman.
6 foot, I thought it was seven.
It ranges between 6 and 8 in some people, even down to like 5 feet. So here's kind of the overview of the Point Pleasant case. On November 15th, 1966, two young couples from Point Pleasant, Roger and Lisa Scarberry and Steve and Mary Millette, told police that they saw a large gray creature whose eyes glowed red when the car's headlights picked it up. They described it as a large flying man with 10-foot wings. Following their car while they were driving down the road in an area outside of town known as the TNT area, the site of the former World War II munitions plant. During the next few days, other people reported similar sightings. Two volunteer firefighters saw a large bird with red eyes. Mason County Sheriff George Johnson commented that he believed the sightings were due to an unusually large heron he termed as the shitepoke. Contractor Newell Partridge told Johnson that when he aimed a flashlight at the creature in a nearby field, its eyes glowed like a bicycle reflector. Additionally, he blamed buzzing noises from his television set and the disappearance of his German Shepherd dog on this creature.
The dog story to me is pretty funny because I don't know like how much you actually have on that experience.
It's not in my notes very much.
So that guy had his dog. I think the dog's name was Bandit. He had an issue with his television. They heard a noise and his dog started barking sort of like at the door. So he goes outside and is kind of looking around his little farm area, points flashlight out there, and he catches what he looks like these two red glowing eyes. Okay. He's like, what the hell is that? Mm. And then his dog, who was like a hunting dog, just bolts after it. And he goes, no, come back. And the dog didn't come back. So he just went back inside.
He loved the dog.
He got his gun. And then apparently he was like, I was too afraid to go outside. So he just went to bed. Never saw the dog again. Okay. Never saw the dog again.
Well, maybe they're in West Virginia.
Yeah.
It's a little different. These dogs come and go. Or
I mean, he clearly was like, whatever's out there, dog went after it.
Taught me, that's your dog. You get out there and you, that.
Not in West Virginia. He's like, wants to get another one.
So he reports something. He sees something. He lets something go. Dog. Mm-hmm. And then what? Nothing else? Just that's it?
For that guy, yeah. And that's the weird thing with a lot of these is they all come from, like, it's a small town. So everyone there, sort of the reports are like, police being like, well, I have to believe him. I've known this guy for 20 years. He wouldn't make silly stuff like this up. But it's almost like they see something. It's one experience. And then they're just sort of scarred for life. But that's about it.
Okay.
So wildlife biologist Robert L. Smith at West Virginia University told reporters that descriptions and sightings all fit the sandhill crane, a large American crane almost as tall as a man.
Yes, they have red eyes.
With wingspan. The bird may have wandered outside of its migration route and therefore was unrecognizable at first because it was not native to this region. So, and that's a big thing I think we all know and most people listening know, kind of tied in with the lore of the Mothman, is that, well, it's a sandhill crane.
That's sort of one of the main explanations is, yeah, it's just a big old birdie flooping a boot.
I think there's something else tied into the Mothman experience, which is predicting certain outcomes.
Well, and the big thing with the bird explanation is they give like several, like some people say it was a big snow owl or something, but like the birds either don't get to be 6, 7, 8 feet tall, or in case of that first story with the two couples, they said that they had tried to escape it by driving over 100 miles per hour
and it was just keeping pace with them.
I don't think the crane is flying that fast, so it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it sounds really convenient until you try to connect every dot to it. And then it's like, oh, well, this doesn't add up. That doesn't add up.
We're talking about two couples out in a car late at night. How old were they?
It doesn't say. I think
old enough to be married. They were
younger. I think they were like 20 to 23.
Somewhere in that range.
And back in that day, back in the 1960s, things were different. Like some of these people still lived with their parents. The home structure was different.
Right.
I know. I would make up a lot of things.
When you lived in the 60s? When you grew up in the 60s?
If I had, I would say anything if I was chasing that, you know. and I'm with a couple, I mean, there's possibilities there.
So, interesting tidbit about that specific incident. When the police interrogated them, or, you know, whatever, took their statements, mm-hmm. they did it separately. They separated all four of them mm-hmm. and took their statements individually.
Yeah, I remember reading that.
Each statement was almost verbatim
yeah.
the same. So. Yeah,
and the sheriff at the time knew, at least the boys, he knew them from, like, when they were kids. And yeah. like, they wouldn't make this kind of stuff up. It's not in their nature to just tell tall tales, so.
No, I like to tell, tell, tell.
Tell, tell, tell.
Tell, tell, tell. It's not in their nature to tell, tell, tell.
No, yeah. One of the things that I've always found interesting was that all this kind of, this activity, and we haven't gotten into all of it, but it all centered around this TNT plant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was an old World War II ammunition plant.
Kind of a scary place, mm-hmm. if you think about it. Even growing up in that era, like, this is where they make dynamite. This
yeah.
is where they make weapons of war.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of things going on worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people wanted to join and couldn't join, or things were going on. There were a lot of politics going on back then.
Well, and I don't know.
The government built it. Big surprise for the Russians.
Yeah, it was a military complex.
Guess
yeah.
what? We got explosives.
If you're Russian and you're listening to this, you're damn right we did.
Yeah, look out. We have TNT.
It's a great channel, Russia. You'd like it.
Don't worry about it.
There's wrestling on it.
We have gunpowder.
TNT Raw.
But I also remember from stories that I've read about and things that I followed over the years is it all kind of centered around this, and this town was located, I mean, this thing had been abandoned mm-hmm. for how long?
I think it was sort of let go from use after World War II.
Yeah.
I don't think it was used for much. And
so there's a lot of speculation there and a lot of folklore or whatnot, but, like, I mean, that kind of feeds into the whole, ooh.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot to it.
These roads, too, they're not a straight road.
No, I'm sure some of them are, but yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, from what I know about the terrain, like, it's not just a straight road. You just pop in and pop out.
Right.
So there are things going on in the night. Yeah, we all realize that. But these kids are local.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we're talking 2025.
Right.
What reason do they have to make it up?
Right.
Yeah.
They experienced something. They wanted to share it. They're frightened.
That's oddly kind of the consensus that everyone has is, like, this sounds crazy and it's far-fetched and a giant bird man flying around West Virginia. And then you listen to the stories and kind of research who witnessed these things, and everyone's yeah. like,
"They had
why
no
would they make this up?"
Like, you're 15, you're 16, you're 17, you get your license, you're driving about, whatever. And I kind of touch base on it a little bit. Maybe trying to hide something. We're talking about, I mean, in that day and age, full-on adults.
Mm-hmm.
They yeah. live with their parents, but this is a different time. Like, they're full-on adults.
Yeah.
Right.
What reason do they have, and why would they bring this attention to themselves?
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't.
So, a couple more quick points on the Mothman history here. Like we kind of touched on earlier, it gained the name Mothman due to the Batman TV series that was out, and the newspapers kind of attached Mothman to it. So,
oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's known as the Mothman. It really wasn't, like Jake was saying earlier, no one's ever really described it as a moth. It's always been a cloaked or winged creature with glowing eyes. And then the newspaper gave it that title, and it just kind of, the lore
yeah,
took off on its own. Yeah.
The ties to Mothman and Batman, kind of funny. I don't know if you have the other tie to Batman in your notes.
I don't. You texted me that earlier. We'll touch on that here in a second. Because I only have a couple more points for
okay, yeah, this. Let's get out of West Virginia.
We'll get through that. And then, because things start to get, well, things are really weird with the West Virginia case, but things start to get even just way deeper in the weird once we move outside of there. So following the December 15th, 1967 collapse of the Silver Bridge and the death of 46 people, the incident gave rise to the legend and the connected Mothman sightings to the bridge collapse. So that's the big thing that people mm-hmm. associate with the Mothman and what you had slightly touched on earlier, Mike, about they're sometimes touted as like the harbingers of calamities and stuff like that.
Correct, yeah. I think a lot of that is Hollywood. Mothman prophecies came
out. Sure, that's actually the next note I have. Is like that, that movie came out in 2002, and it was based on the 1975 book by the same name written by John Keel.
Mm-hmm.
And then this last bit, and then we'll discuss this a little bit further, and then we'll go into some stuff. But so some pseudoscience adherents, such as UFOologists, paranormal authors, and cryptozoologists, claim that the Mothman was an alien of supernatural manifestation or previously unknown species of animal. In his book, Keel claimed that Point Pleasant residents experienced precognitions, including premonitions of the collapse of the Silver Bridge, UFO sightings, visits from inhuman and threatening men in black, and other phenomena. So.
That's a lot.
that is a mouthful. That gets into the weird, though.
Well, and that's the weird thing with this, too, is it like, in that area at that time, it's not even just Mothman. Like, there was
it's like everything paranormal.
There was a giant spike of UFO sightings, yeah. Strange creature sightings outside of being the Mothman. There's the Flatwoods Monster, which was a big thing.
Yep.
There was a huge rise in like poltergeist activity and like hauntings and people like experiencing weird things.
What years are we talking?
So the book was written in 75. The occurrences from the West Virginia started around 66 and the bridge collapsed in 67. So kind of a, we'll say 8 year span maybe.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And it is a hard, like the bridge collapses and then just that's the end.
So,
the end.
There's never been a sighting in
Point Pleasant
since the bridge collapsed.
And here's the thing. So we do keep saying West Virginia, but Point Pleasant is a border town right across from Ohio.
The bridge.
Right. So literally. The thing that we've learned with our conversations and listening to our buddies Cryptid of the Corn, Ohio is a huge hotspot for a lot of cryptid and just paranormal things. Some people associate that with the Mammoth Cave system that is underneath a chunk of Ohio, most of Tennessee, most of West Virginia. It lives up to the name Mammoth Cave.
Hellier.
Yep.
But that's all.
I mean, to the audience listening right now, if anybody hasn't already watched Hellier, I mean, they talk about the underground system there.
It's all connected. It's all there. Bigfoot, Mothman, they're all living in the cave.
Trolls, elves, everything.
Hobbits.
Hobbits. No, they never talk about hobbits. And I know you want to.
Right. That was Lord of the Rings. They're both on Amazon. I got confused for a second.
No, but what's interesting about that is, you know, there is an underground system. And how do you map that? How do you collect that? How do you...
Yeah, I mean, they've been doing it slowly, but...
Yeah,
but
it's a very risky...
I mean, they've got...
very risky.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact stats, but I know it's a pretty low percentage of the cave that they actually have mapped right now. I mean, they've got some of it mapped, but there's a lot of it that they don't have mapped, which is nuts.
Yeah.
Because it also, I mean, weren't we talking... Aren't we thinking part of it actually stretches up here even?
Possibly, yeah. There's a giant cave system over... by Milwaukee and even like, I mean, by Blue Mountains.
Well, I grew up I grew up in Mayville, Wisconsin, right next to Iron Ridge. You came to my stepmom's funeral in Iron Ridge.
Right.
There's a cave system that runs under all of us there in Iron Ridge, Mayville, Theresa. Yeah.
Yeah, and then like Cave of the Mounds over by Blue Mountain State Park.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a giant cave system.
And there are theories out there.
70 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
But there's theories out there that that's all connected to Mammoth Cave.
I mean, they think in theory, like it would be silly to have a giant cave system and then right over there be like, oh, there's another giant cave system. Like, obviously, at some point they connect.
We have some maps right now that are available to us to see that, but to experience it and be like, really fathom how large that is.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there's cave systems that run the entire America. Like
United States, right?
Yeah, it's just a giant rock. Like, of course there's going to be giant holes in it somewhere. Yep. So.
Well, then we just delve into your favorite theory of the Hollow Earth.
Hey,
you know what? Is that a thing?
It's more believable than the flat Earth.
Hold on. Is this
have you never? Hold on.
He said your favorite.
Oh, he just busted my balls because I always make fun of anyone that does specifically flat Earth, but the hollow Earth kind of.
Well, there are stories though.
It's where the reptilians live.
Well, not just reptilians, but there are stories that go back to, you know, ancient Egypt, saying there was a civilization back here and there, and they went underground because there was a threat from above.
Yeah.
So they preemptively built and caved out or carved out.
Yeah. I mean, the hollow Earth gets more extensive than that. That's the theory that the entire inner part of the Earth.
Right. There's an ecosystem.
Down is there. Not caves. It's a giant open hollow
right.
space. So like essentially the inside of a basketball, we're living on the outside part. There's people that live on the inside it's part.
It's better here.
And It's all dumb. It's all just
it's make Jake's favorite thing to talk about.
It's all just make believe and nonsense.
So
maybe
unlike maybe Mothman.
Mike, you'd asked earlier about why the Mothman's my favorite thing. So this touches on why. That movie came out. I was a sophomore.
Which movie?
Mothman Prophecies.
There you go.
Came
with
out.
With Richard Gere.
And the chick from Will and Grace.
I like how he had to plug Richard Gere so he could take a shot at Richard Gere.
I have to. He's terrible.
Who's in that movie? Oh, yeah, that
Pretty
guy sucks.
Woman was the only movie he was good in, period.
And he was really held up by...
himself.
Yeah.
Yes, continue.
So that movie had come out and...
Is that a gerbil joke? I don't know.
I just became infatuated with it. Like anything, scary movies, it creeped me out. But I was simultaneously, like we talked about with Aliens, just enthralled with it and terrified at the same time. Then I learned it was based on a book. So I spent a good chunk of time reading this book. And the movie sucks compared to the book because that book delves into things that are just intense.
Indrid Cold.
Yeah. Well, he is. That's maybe one of the only things that. No, there's more from the book in the movie. But that book just goes into very deep detail about stuff.
Well, and even.
Well, I thought it was interesting, too, is that, you know, I obviously, you know, I watched The Mothman Prophecies with Richard Gere. And,
I heard he's a great actor.
You heard wrong. But then, you know, one night I spent at my aunt, my uncle's, and I was, you know, my aunt always stays up late. Anyways, she loves unsolved mysteries. And this thing was recorded back in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
Mothman Prophecies released in the 90s.
2002.
Yeah, 2002. There you go.
Yeah.
And it goes verbatim with interviews.
Yep.
And call me stupid, but I trust unsolved mysteries. I mean, that guy's voice.
Robert Stack, much more trustworthy than Richard Gere. Robert Stack,
yes. So,
well, it's funny, though, because with the book and the movie, John Keel, after the movie came out, was like, I mean, it was all right, but... they really just, they didn't follow the book at all.
No, they didn't.
Like, I guess I've never seen the movie, but I guess they changed Indrid Cold's sort of, they hint at him being more involved than he was. And
yeah, there's
just a bunch of weird, and they basically make two characters out of, is it John Keel is like technically the, I don't know if he's
can't
the main
remember
guy.
He was like an investigate, like a reporter, and that's how the book came about.
He was a paranormal investigator. He was huge in the 60s.
Yeah. It's, again, the movie's entertaining. And if you're looking for a doorway into, like, the Mothman, it's a good. But go further than that movie. I mean, so, it's very Hollywood side.
You know what's funny about that movie is I had always seen, you know, seen it on the, like, the video rental store shelves and stuff, or, like, when it's on TV. Like, the Mothman Prophecies. I always thought that it was a spy espionage movie that had nothing to actually do with Mothman because Richard Gere's in it. So I was like, oh, it's not going to be a scary movie.
Or he's buying a prostitute.
Yeah. So it was one of those things of just like later when everyone's like, oh, Mothman Prophecies is really scary.
Mothman, you've come of age. It's time to get you a prostitute.
And
listen, that thing corners like it's on rails. Let's get this done.
So I just started my obsession with it and that. So fast forward a while, I'm driving home for the first time on leave from the Navy, from Norfolk. And I take advantage of driving home, and I actually drive through Point Pleasant and spend the night there at a hotel. And the next day I went to the Mothman Museum and just kind of wandered around town a little bit.
Did they have the giant statue?
Yeah, they had the giant statue, which I guess was only like 2 or 3 years old when I was there. It wasn't
long.
They put it in after the movie.
Yeah.
I stayed in a hotel on the outskirts of town, and I could see the TNT plant from my hotel. And that was...
Yeah,
that was creepy enough for me. When
it's demonstrated in the movie, like it's an aspect of the town, like it's prevalent.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and the movie made it much more. After the movie came out, a lot of people were like, "Mothman, heck yeah! Like, let's go. Let's if we forgot it existed, but they made a movie, let's go."
We're gonna dive into the Lake Michigan Mothman, which has been going on for quite a while. There's a lot of accounts. Like we said, there's going to be a little bit of a series for a while. So just a little background on the Lake Michigan Mothman. There have been a dozen reported sightings of large flying creatures in the Chicago and greater Illinois area, as well as Michigan, Indiana, Missouri, and Wisconsin, dating as far back as the late 50s. According to the University of Chicago psychologist David A. Galeo, 55 sightings of the Mothman in Chicago during 2017, published on the self-described 14 researcher Lon Strickler, are a selective sample of what basically he's saying that these 55 sightings in 2017 spurred tons of people to actually come forward and start talking about
their sightings. So like a resurgence? Sightings. People felt comfortable enough to...
They
detail their accounts.
So on Strickler's website, which is Phantoms and Monsters, people started seeing in 2017, started seeing these accounts come up in the Chicago area, and more people then started dating back further and further, started reporting. Okay. All of these that we're going to touch on are from one of the, either any one of these four websites, Phantoms and Monsters, UFO Clearinghouse, the Singular 14. Is it? We had this talk. Is it 14? It's F-O-R-T-E-A-N. I've heard it pronounced differently than 14.
That's 14. Grass on
it's
the
not
field.
14. Fortine.
I don't. I'll have to look up. But anyway,
he doesn't deserve a plug if he can't get a more pronounceable.
Anyway,
name
the Singular 14 Society and the MUFON Network Society.
We're gonna say it 14 different ways.
Yeah. So all of these accounts come from any one of those four websites.
All right.
All right. So starting in the 1950s.
What a time.
This was reported by a 79-year-old Gerald.
G-E-R-A-L-D, I bet it's
spelled. Nice. Nick, got it.
The G is...
You want to keep going, Mr. Vineyard?
Wow.
That's not a dig at you, that's a dig at him.
Yeah, I can't read.
Yeah.
It's a vineyard.
Vineyard.
Yeah, when we were talking trolls, Jake was all giddy because Mount Horeb's got a vineyard. He was telling me, like, they even have a vineyard.
I heard it. Let's talk about Gerald.
Gerald Therese. He saw a winged creature that had the body of a large man with legs. This took place near Braidwood, Illinois, in the winter of 1957. All right, so here's his story and his account.
Do we know where that town is, like, roughly in comparison to something that anyone knows? Like, where is it to Chicago?
Is it close to Lake Michigan? Is it?
Well, here's the thing. I've got my phone with all everything on it. You both have your phones.
I don't use my phone when I'm on podcasts. Everybody knows.
Oh, my God.
We've talked about this.
I'll Google.
You got it. It's Goggle. You're going to goggle it.
What was the name of the sound?
Bing it instead. Braidwood. I think we get better.
Braidwood. Yeah, you get more truth from Bing.
Yeah, Bing it.
Go to Ask Jeeves.
It's ask.com now.
Just Ask Jeeves. It was around...
It's 53 miles southwest of Chicago.
There you go.
79-year-old man.
Yep.
See something. Does he have glasses?
Probably.
Okay, my cousin Vinny.
I'm asking relevant questions. What does he see?
Well, can I get to the story before you start interrogating me?
Calm down, Mikey. It's in the notes.
Yeah, it's in the notes. It's in the notes, Michael. It was around 1957 when I was... Oh, my God. I hate reading.
Just do it.
I'm trying. All right. It was around 1957 when I was with my late brother, Gene, and his late brother-in-law. We were hunting in the Braidwood, Illinois area for pheasants and rabbits. As we were walking in this large open field, there was a lone large tree standing in the middle of the field. When we were directly under it, a huge man-sized creature sailed over our heads into the woods across the road. We were stunned. We just looked at each other, too dumbfounded to speak. The winged creature had the body of a large man with legs, but it was covered all over its body with dark, tan feathers. This happened so long ago, I don't recall what the face looked like.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall in my research, but maybe you will, but like, I know Mothman originally was described as either tan or brown, but was he ever described as having feathers other than maybe his wings?
That's the best furry? My account that I can think of is that like the wings have been the only thing that have been associated.
Yeah. Because it's always bird like wings, which I assume means they had feathers, but his body always seems to be depicted as like a jacked, like CrossFit dude, and just like big old bird wings. So like Jesus with wings.
Yeah.
But I've never heard him.
Dark tan in the middle of the night.
I mean, it is. Yeah. That is the
79
thing.
79 years old.
Well, he's.
My grandpa stopped hunting at like 64. And all he did was he would just sit in the car and we'd be like, Grandpa, there's deer out there. He would stumble out with all his might. I'm just saying, 79 years old back in the 1950s.
Maybe the dude took care of himself. He made it through World War II.
I don't think he was 79 when this happened. I think he was 79 when the account.
When he reported it?
Yes.
Okay.
Ah.
That's my mess up. That's why I just got...
Okay. I'm like, there's no way this guy's moving around.
I like how Mikey just instantly went into, I'm going to pick this
whole thing apart. I am, because, guys, this is what we do. But, like...
So, Gerald...
Gerald.
Was Gerald. Asked if it, he had any...
Is it Gerald?
If it, he it could had be ever Harold. Had, if he had had any other paranormal experiences before this sighting. And he said that he had an encounter at a U.S. Army station at a Nike's Hercules missile site in Northfield, Illinois in 1963.
So you got a Herkimer battle jet?
You got a Herkimer battle jet?
Just junk it.
So this is that account. He said he was on guard. He was on guard duty at the time at the radar station. It was after midnight when he witnessed a UFO in the sky southeast of his location. It was maybe a mile away and 1,000 feet up. He watched it for a few minutes and he made a phone call to his commanding officer in Arlington, Illinois to let him know what was going on. He said he was contacted a few days later by Dr. J. Allen Hynek. And this is actually in apparently Project Blue Book.
J. Hynek pops up a lot in UFO research.
It does.
He said, Dr. J. Hynek had told me that he was informed to tell me that I saw was just a private airplane towing an advertising sign. I doubt they would be flying at that time of night, he says. Now, there's no way a plane could ever make the moves I witnessed. And at the end of this encounter, the UFO just shot up into space as fast as a bullet. All right, so this is the first Lake Michigan Mothman sighting. This is as far back as it goes as 57, which predates the West Virginia incident even.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, true, but American sighting or what we're talking relevant recent American sighting, there are depictions.
Not the only one that can't talk.
Yep, there are depictions on
depictions.
You got me there. But there are
hieroglyphs.
Yes, hieroglyphs of
cave paintings.
Interpretations of the Mothman.
Interpretations
back to Egypt. So
no, and that's what's weird that I have not seen in a lot of the research I've done. I know because I think going back to like when I was looking at the Mothman as a kid and stuff like that. I know it goes into like Native culture and almost all sort of ancient cultures kind of have.
Well, and I don't know if we want to delve into this too much because, again, it's not technically in our window of what we cover as far as, like, Wisconsin and the Midwest. But in the West Virginian case, I don't know if you know the story of why they originally think kind of where Mothman may have came from, along with the major negative history that like Point Pleasant has in that area.
Okay.
But it is a Native American curse that was put down by Chief, was it Cornstalk, I think
yeah.
it was?
Yeah.
He basically went to a like an American encampment fort in that area and was like, hey, let's stop fighting. It's dumb that we're fighting. And then they either took him captive or like some people say he like chose to stay there as sort of a way to like stop everyone from fighting. Like Native Americans were well, and like Native American tribes were like, well, we're not going to attack you because he's there. Yep. But this was also at the time that the British, it was right before the American Revolution. So the British were kind of getting them in a frenzy to attack American colonists.
Yeah.
And basically at one point, two soldiers went out to go hunting. They got killed by Native Americans. So in retaliation, all the troops there killed him. Chief Red Hawk, which was another chief that was there, Chief Cornstalk's son, and another unnamed Native American guy that was there. And in his dying breath, he basically cursed that land.
Who's dying breath?
Chief Cornstalk.
And but you did mention there's another there that was unnamed.
Mm-hmm.
That's curious.
I feel like they just didn't bother to write. Because apparently from the...
Well, we can think anything, but...
But, like, that's kind of the idea of where it comes from, is a lot of people think, like, he cursed it, so all the bad stuff happened, and this Mothman is sort of an incarnation of
reincarnation.
That, of that curse, like, coming to...
So it's
to,
a loop. It just constantly keeps coming back.
Yeah.
Until what?
Well, but no, so that's the interesting part. That was placed on the Point Pleasant area.
Yep.
And the bridge collapse happened, and nothing, no sightings since the bridge collapse in 67. So all of that history now makes me wonder about the Lake Michigan area. This, like, you know, the states that were listed, it's got a big swath of where it's seen. I mean, as far as north is almost Rhinelander.
Mm-hmm. A lot of things have happened on Lake Michigan.
Too. Oh, yeah. No, we are going into Lake Michigan, too. So, it is interesting.
I didn't know that about the Native American tribal connection.
Yeah.
And that it but the Lake Michigan, this first sighting, predate the West Virginia sighting. So that's
an
interesting thing to.
Well, it's funny. So all of this with, you know, him being seen in different areas and all of that, I never really thought about till when we had the talk with the guys from Cryptids of the Corn.
Yeah.
And the idea of these cryptids that migrate. And it never crossed my mind that, that's a thing. Well, Justin on that show pointed out the idea that Sasquatch, the spikes in, like, sightings, you could almost track it like an animal as far as, like, well, in the winter they're here, in the summer they're over here.
Yep.
And it never occurred to me in the idea that if these things are actually, you know, more animal than, like, say, paranormal, that they would totally migrate with food patterns and, you know.
Well, how about just the rotation of the earth, too? We're talking about a lot of energy.
Yeah, I mean, any of that. Whatever causes animals to naturally migrate, it would make sense that...
Well, not just animals, but, like, sightings of paranormal, right?
Yeah.
Like we could be multidimensional and gates opening up, so...
Yeah, I mean, anything's possible. It's
getting
just...
deep, but...
Yeah.
No, it's you're right though. It does kind of spur that thought of is it migrating? Well, let's go into the next account because maybe we'll learn something from that.
Ooh.
So the next recording came in October 27th, 1969 in Rolling Prairie.
Right. Yeah, you too.
Sorry.
Say it again slowly.
Gerald.
Gerald 69.
Okay.
Okay, moving on.
I'm
a child.
Damn it. Now I gotta say his name after you just did that.
Yeah, do it.
Say it.
I hope it's like
Frank.
All right,
so this took place in Rolling Prairie, Indiana.
What's his name?
God, I'm sitting with a bunch of juveniles. Floyd R. Hancock. Saw this.
Wait, I'm not done laughing.
All 69, you're Hancock.
Oh,
do I need to beep that?
Dude, you have the editing power. You do what you want.
Hold on, dude. Just Hancock it. Push right through.
I Hancock every night.
You got it.
Okay, so Hancock states that he and his family, his mother, his father, his sister, and his grandmother were living in a trailer situated on their family's land. The trailer had sustained damage in the roof from a prior storm, leaving a large hole. The hole was covered with a wide waterproof tarp until it was to be repaired. Floyd and his baby sister shared a bedroom, and one night, Floyd was awakened by a strange noise and a strong, disagreeable odor. As he looked towards his sister's crib, he saw a tall, winged humanoid staring down at her. The being slowly turned and looked at him. The creature was described as being very tall, between 7 and 8 feet in height, with a body and a face covered in black hair. Its posture was crouched. It had huge leathery wings, shaped like a bat or a gargoyle, and muscular arms and legs. The creature's body and face were thin and looked like a human skeleton with sharp teeth and dark eyes. It made a low, garbled sound towards Hancock. He screamed in order to alert his parents in the adjoining room, but they never responded. His grandmother was the only one that came to his aid. She was stunned at the sight and immediately fell to her knees. The creature picked up Hancock in his arms and made its way through into the living room, where it went up through the hole and, you know, pushed the tarp over or whatever. And Hancock remembers being very cold and wet and hearing his grandmother screaming as the winged humanoid took off into the sky. He has no idea how long he was gone, but he only remembers waking up in his bed among his panicked parents and grandmother. So Hancock states that his grandmother witnessed the entire event and documented it. His living relatives concur with the account, since his grandmother had recalled to each of them what had happened, and she passed away in 85. Hancock's parents apparently were put into some type of hypnotic trance during the abduction. They only woke finding him in his bed, or kind of...
Wait, right, so they were in a trance during the event, like not after remembering it?
Yeah, like during...
I'm sorry, how old was the dude? Does it say? Because
sister was much younger. It sounds like he was like 8 or 9, and she was infant.
Yeah, I think
so.
It was
because I missed that at the beginning. Yeah. I thought he was like a grown up in the story, dude. Just
he was
like
a teenager.
Okay,
or maybe a little younger, like 8 or 9, something like that.
Just a man getting taken by another giant winged man. You're coming with me.
So I'm looking at these notes here, and I just realized. So it said that he woke up in his bed, but then later on, I get it. So his parents are saying, I screwed my notes up and it split it into two different accounts. Hancock only remembers waking up in his bed. His parents said that.
And grandmother
said that the creature took off with him. And after a few moments, they heard scratching on the top of the trailer. And his dad went up there, like gained access up there, and Hancock was laying up there and then got him and put him in his bed because they were just panicked about the whole thing. So they like,
man, that's like, this is like borderline an alien abduction story almost.
Yeah. The abduction has affected him his entire life. But he said he's endured emotional problems his entire life, which he attributes to the abduction. At the time of the Mothman's Prophecies film, he had a mental breakdown after watching it in the theater. He had to literally leave during the scene where the Mothman caused an automobile crash. And he's never attempted to watch it after that.
Man, that's nuts. That's like more intense than any of the West Virginia stuff. Like, they just saw something.
Unfortunately, there's... You hear a story like that, you're like, oh, man, I really want to believe it. But there's nothing to back it up. It says his grandmother documented what, in a diary?
I mean, it depends on what your idea of, like, there's nothing to document other than several eyewitnesses.
Yeah.
Which is very, I mean, there's a lot of cases that that's all you have is several eyewitnesses.
So are we thinking that he literally passed out because of fear and just anxiety? And
I mean, if his parents were in a hypnotic trance, it could be that. It has been said that some people, you know, when they encounter the Mothman, do get put into some sort of hypnotic state.
Well, I was gonna bring it up too when we were talking about kind of the colors that Mothman is, and the reason that they kind of had this idea of why there's a discrepancy is that many people from the West Virginia cases, I'm not sure how many states in the ones in the Midwest here, but a lot of the people that saw Mothman ended up getting essentially pink eye, but it's a version of pink eye that you get basically from being in the sun too long. And there's a thought that whatever, whether it's radiation from Mothman or from his eyes, when you see him, you get this. And a lot of people said, like, yeah, they had pink eye for like months after having witnessed a Mothman.
Yeah, there's accounts of like red eyes. I don't know if you want to call it pink eye or whatnot. But also, I think it's interesting with the color combination. If you go back to the history of scary movies, I know you're not going to be affluent on this, but the reason why, what was his name? Wes Craven invented Freddy Krueger. That came from a dream of his.
Yeah.
Where he woke from a dream and he spotted, and this is real time. So he woke from a nightmare and he was living with his mother. I think they were divorced or something like that. He was living with his mother. It was hard times. And he woke to a noise outside from a nightmare. So he's already amped up. But he looked down in the alley and they lived on the third level. So top level of this rundown apartment in New York City or something, somewhere. Gutty and gritty. And there was an old man drunk coming back from the bars like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and he's wearing green and red. And if you know anything about green and red combination,
Christmas.
Right. Christmas. But what it does to your psyche, that color combination unsettles human beings. Which is why Freddy Krueger's sweatshirt is green and red.
Green and red.
Striped. Anyways, he has this experience and he recollects it, you know, comes up with this. This man smiles back at, almost as if he knew that he as a child was looking at him, and smiles back grimacingly, and like that was his idea of Freddy Krueger. So it's interesting that, you know, we keep talking about red eyes, red eyes, red eyes, dark, black, dark. You know, how about forest green?
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point.
In the night?
In the night, yeah. In the night, that's going to register as black. It's
yeah.
Gonna, you know, and same also with like a blue. What does that do to us?
Right.
Fear.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that interesting.
Yeah. Well, the fact that it sounds like Mothman might be able to, whether consciously through like an act or just like from whatever it is, giving people like, it's not that they saw pink eyes. They actually got like pink eye, like conjunctivitis.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like maybe that's something to do with it, is this kid saw something and Mothman's like, I'm gonna make you not remember.
Was it
this.
Pink eye, or did the blood vessels actually burst?
No, because it was like they were tested for conjunctivitis.
Really?
Yeah. And I can't remember what the exact kind it is, but it's a different kind that you basically get from being in the sun too long. So essentially the area around their eyes was burned.
Okay.
I'll say one thing right now. If I ever have an encounter with anything extraterrestrial or anything, I hope they give me pink eye.
Just wear sunglasses.
Because I'll tell everybody.
Okay. Moving on into the 1970s. There are two accounts from the 1970s. David Ramos, at the time of the reporting of the incident, he was 60 years old. See, I learned my lesson from the last one I typed up to
now
this
we know.
One.
60. That's six, a relatively,
zero.
I mean.
Six,
no,
zero.
He was 60 at the time he reported this account. This account
oh,
was
how
bad.
Old was he?
So this is what we were talking about at the beginning of, the,
yeah.
of
yeah.
this, where like this 2017 flap, he's one of these people who came out of the woodwork to report this. And he think
oh, like so in 2017, so, he was 60 being like, hey, in the 70s, yes, some stuff happened.
Yes.
Cool. Yep. We got the narrative.
This took place in Riverview Park. It's the north branch of the Chicago River. Fall of 1971. Ramos was 12 years old at the time of this account. When I was... What's up?
You know, I just find it interesting that a lot of these accounts are happening around large bodies of water, whether they're rivers, lakes.
Would one say Lake Michigan?
I'm just saying, though, like, you know, well, talk
I mean,
about,
that's a common thread with all paranormal is a lot of people think that it's always
what's
connected
up with the
to,
water?
I think
weirdos.
In my personal opinion, it's just that as humans we settled near large bodies of water, so there's just a large population. So I don't know. I'm not edumacated.
All right.
Vineyard.
When I was about 12 years old, a bunch of us boys were playing around near the banks of the North Branch of the Chicago River, throwing rubble, concrete from the demolished park into the river and making splashes. I didn't like being too close to the river, so I went down the riverbank, and I went up the path again by myself. I looked northward and saw a very tall, skinny man who was very dark on the path about 200 feet away. He looked about 7 feet tall. He looked like he had a cape on. I was expecting this thing to be a man, but when I saw him turn around, it wasn't a man. He glanced my way, threw his arms up. What I thought was a cape turned out to be wings. He ran and flapped them, then disappeared into the trees towards the bank. I was petrified right there, and I looked around, but my friends were looking south and still playing around. It was always spooky by the river, even in broad daylight. This, I guess they demolished whatever Riverview is. He said, I got the feeling of something evil that day and wanted to go home immediately. I never went back there again. They built one of those, they actually built the one of the our police stations right over there. And the 19th District, they built one of the police stations in that area, and it was the 19th District. So he said he used to go there to change out cars and have cars serviced in that area. And he said, even as a policeman going over there for that, I still remembered that day. And it's always stuck with him. It's always creepy every time he had to go do something for his cars. And he said, back then I thought it was a scary Halloween mask or something. It looked like he had goggles on. I couldn't explain that. There was no focal point for me because it wasn't like a human type face. It just had big eyes was the thing I remember. He said, I tried to remember if something bad happened to any of us shortly after that. And I just remembered that one of the older boys that we were with that day shot and killed a rival gang member shortly after that sighting. He was 16 at the time and went to jail. At 17, went to jail 5 years later for murder.
That's a weirdly, like, probably not connected in any way. Yeah. Detail is
throw in there. Also, this Mothman was trying to escape him. He was frightened by him, by the boy.
It's also kind of weird. One detail that stands out to me was he said that when the Mothman looked at him or whatever it was, it flapped its wings and flew away.
Yeah.
If you pay attention to any Mothman stories originally, he never actually flaps his wings. That's a detail that every witness points in is that he...
It was always about soaring. Or
he glides. Yeah. Even when he leaves the stories of him like going from the ground, taking nothing off, moves. He doesn't flap. He just spreads his
and
wings.
Also, and also, if he flapped his wings and he was facing him, that doesn't mean he was going away from him when he was flying. If he had to flap his wings and he was facing him, it means he would go over him.
It's just a strange detail that's different from... any other details?
Well, these, I mean, other than...
And also, I feel like the Mothman in this story is the victim. I mean, he's afraid of this kid.
Don't side with the cryptids,
probably Mikey. Throwing rocks at him and didn't want to admit it.
other than the first account by Gerald, we have one that's an abduction case, which is... Out of a lot of these cases, I think that's one of the first and maybe only abduction.
The only one that I can think of.
That's different.
And I mean, like I said, there's still plenty more I'm digging through right now, making notes for future episodes. And as far as I know so far, that's the first abduction situation I've seen. And this one, I think, is the first of several, but this was broad daylight that this happened in.
This one sounds made up.
Do you think this one's made up?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean...
This one doesn't
either. I mean, I wouldn't even necessarily say made up, but definitely
far-fetched.
It reads more to me of a dude who saw something, probably a big bird, or maybe just a creepy dude back when he was a kid. And then in 2017, when everyone's like Mothman
remember, humans are flawed.
I saw the Mothman. Yeah, totally saw a Mothman.
This doesn't sound
I threw a rock at him, and then my buddy Dave
shot
a kid.
Which I think is important to bring up, though, too.
Yeah, I mean, it very well could have been the Sandhill Crane, too. I mean, especially with talking about the detail of flapping its wings, and you guys talking about that is something that other incidences have specifically reported doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Maybe this was actually a Sandhill Crane with that.
See, that's the detail that to me says whatever everyone else is seeing, this guy didn't, whatever he saw, it wasn't that. Because everyone else is like, the weird thing about Mothman is he has wings, but he doesn't flap them. He's always gliding.
Like Batman.
Even when he jumps off the ground, he'll jump and go straight up, but there's no flapping. And this guy's like, oh, he flapped his wings. And it's like, whatever you saw I don't think was Mothman.
You liar.
I think
Mothman can't flap wings.
Well, maybe he's not a liar, but, you know, it just, like we said, you know, just remember it now, how many years later?
Yeah, we're going, 40 years after the events? Like, those are always the...
It doesn't match up, though.
Those are always the eyewitness accounts that I'm leery of when they're like, this thing
nothing
happened.
Nothing against him, it's just...
Not as plausible as the other cases. I get it.
Agreed.
So he's the only one that saw an actual Mothman. Everyone else is just full of it.
He does flap.
It's just this guy. Mothman's like, there was a group. He's like, you just get one.
So that's going to wrap up this leg of the Lake Michigan Mothman. You can find us, you know, hit us up on all socials. If you've experienced an encounter with the Mothman, you can hit us up.
Unless it was 40 years ago.
Yeah. Even if it was.
I never had an experience, but I want one.
Mothman's one of the ones that I don't.
Are you kidding me?
Here's the thing that we've learned. When we talked to our buddy Justin from Cryptids of the Corn, he talked about what got him into Bigfoot and cryptids.
Oh, I never heard that.
He had an encounter with Bigfoot as a kid. And he said that he hopes to never see one ever again. He just said the, like, fear. He's like, yeah, it sounds cool on paper to be like, I want to see a Bigfoot. I want to be abducted. Or I want to see an alien. He's like, no, I never want to experience that ever again.
See, I'm personally a little different. Like, I'm still in the camp. I want it again, and I want to do better the next time.
I'm still in the camp of like, yeah, everything else, let's go. Let's experience it. Mothman, I don't for one single reason, and that's because literally everyone that saw him in West Virginia was like, yeah, we got something pink eye. Yeah. We got pink eye. And I'm like, I've had pink eye. That sucks. I don't want pink eye again. No, thank you, Mothman.
He's not scared of anything supernatural, just bacteria. No STD in his eye.
Can touch me, so I'm not afraid.
I'm just like, no, thank you, Mr. Mothman. You can go away. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, if any of you have actually experienced anything with Mothman, hit us up on any of our socials. Email us at americascaryland @gmail.com. The S is shared.
Yep. Also, by now, probably when this is out, whenever this comes out, we should have a voicemail service set up through Anchor, probably, assuming it works, and I figured it out. But feel free to go on there and leave us some voicemails, because I do eventually want to start doing some sort of listener things. So do that. Check that out. Also, check out Anchor, I guess. I don't know. Plug, whatever. Yeah.
It sounded really
good. I'm good at this. Yeah, I am so good. Get hyped.
We're on all the regular socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, which I think the only one that's really, really pertinent for our age bracket is Facebook.
But yeah. Instagram apparently is the cool one.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Mike,
if you're listening to this, you don't care either. Trust me.
We added a grumpy old man.
We also opened an account on Mothmans and Pineapples.
No.
Yep, we did. You can find us on there. Check out our profile in there. You can find us.
Share some stories. Get it out there. Be wild. Be crazy. Whatever. Just
be wild.
Let us know. All right. Do not be 79 years old when you're reporting this.
All right, so we will talk to you guys next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, bye, guys.
Bye, guys.